welcome to another episode of Meeting Pros. I'm your host, Kevin Finn, and as usual, I'm with my lovely co-host, Jessica Park. Hey, Jessica.
Hey, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How was your Memorial Day? Do anything fun and exciting?
I worked more than I would have liked to, but yeah, it was good.
That's awesome. I did not work. I closed down the studio. I told everyone who had shows, I said, you know what? It's Memorial Day. I'm going to take the day off.
Good for you.
So, and then I went apartment hunting, which was, I hate doing that. It's
absolutely not relaxing. You
at
went
all.
Pool hopping too, though.
I did go pool hopping, had some beers, grilled out, and that was the fun part.
Yeah, that's great. Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah, that's what Memorial Day is for.
Well, you brought some interesting guests in the studio with us. They're very, very cool looking. And very young looking. We were just talking about that. So in the studio today, we have Amber C. Saunders with Enrichment Prep and Failure Box. And we also have Christy Janovitz with Crimson Shutter. Well, I think I want to start with Christine first.
All right.
Well, welcome, Christine, to the studio.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
So tell us a little bit about yourself and tell us a little bit about Crimson Shutter. I love the name.
Oh, thank you. I am a fairly recent transplant to Atlanta. I'm from Boston and moved here about 5.5 years ago.
All right.
And I am a divorced single mother of 3 kids. We were just talking about the teenage years, which is loads of fun. And I began Crimson Shutter a few years ago. I started photography years ago, when my children were little, and got into photography that way, just taking pictures of them, and developed into a business. I didn't study photography. I just kind of learned along the way. And Crimson Shutter, the name actually comes from honoring my uncle who passed away a few years ago. His business was Crimson Gate, and I took the name and created my own company out of that.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, people in the studio can't see your hair, but it is very
crimson. Yes.
It is absolutely gorgeous.
Part of my branding.
We love it.
Thank you.
I love it.
So what's your favorite part about doing this now?
My favorite part of photography in my business is working with people. I love just taking pictures of people. I've tried doing other things like food photography and kind of business and stuff like that, and that doesn't really thrill me. So I'm really excited about getting into more involved with boudoir glamour photography, which is really hot
right now.
It's
very hot.
Yeah, really hot right now, and it's so much fun. And, you know, I do a lot of weddings and events and things like that. And I'm finding that more and more people want to do like a boudoir shoot before the wedding to give to their, you know, husband on the wedding day. So
nice little gift.
Yeah. And I'm finding more women like my age, which is 43, more women my age who are now coming into their own almost as, you know, their children are getting older and now they want pictures of themselves, you know, just to kind of spend time on themselves and give themselves a gift.
That's really great.
Yeah.
It's good that more women are opening up to that. Be more, a lot more reserved.
Yeah, and people didn't talk about it. Now
exactly.
It's everywhere.
Absolutely love
yeah.
that.
Yeah. It takes the right personality to put someone in the right comfort zone to accomplish that kind of photo shoot.
So. Absolutely. I think that's kind of one of the things that I find is one of my strengths is being able to put people at ease. And, you know, I laugh a lot. I find humor in every situation. So I will always put people at ease using humor. And once they get comfortable, I gain their trust. And, you know, we go from there. And
we did a photo shoot on Friday, Christine and I. She did a bunch of awesome shots for me.
Yes.
And it was funny when she likes a picture, she laughs. And I'm like,
is that good?
Is it a good picture?
I get a little giddy. So I'm like, look. But when Jessica and I talked about doing the show, I said, great. I'm so excited, but I'm going to do a shoot first. So
definitely.
You can speak to what I do.
Yeah, she was talking about that last show. She was so excited. So she could actually see it firsthand.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
She brought a makeup artist who actually was on another show of ours, Ann Cohen with PWG.
I remember Ann Cohen.
Yeah, she's awesome.
She's amazing at makeup. The woman has more makeup than anybody. So I like to provide women with hair and makeup. And generally
they love
people,
it, too. Who doesn't love getting dolled up?
I know. So it's kind of a nice thing to offer to women as well. So if they come to me for glamour shots, I will bring in a makeup artist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Cool.
Well, Christine, Talk about starting your own business, especially a photography business. That's got to be really difficult because I used to be in the film industry. I know how tough it is and how many people think they can be a photographer.
Yeah, well, you know, that's how I started thinking I'm going to take pictures and make a living out doing this, and didn't realize that there was so much more involved to the business aspect. And I'm actually just, you know, now in the process, I'm still in the process of learning the business side of business.
Definitely. Yeah.
So it's, you know, I didn't realize that the business part would be a much bigger part than the creative part of being a photographer. And so that's been a lesson I've learned along the way.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, I have to think, you mentioned earlier setting people at ease, putting having the kind of personality to be a photographer. I don't think people really think about that, but you need a certain kind of personality. I used to shoot people on film all the time. You can be talking to them, they're having a great time, and then you put a camera in front of their face,
yeah,
and they're like,
I think you have to be able to talk through the photo shoot. Like when I'm shooting people, I'm constantly talking and I never stop. And so I think that's one of the things, you know, with Jessica, she knew how to pose and she was so pretty, so easy. So I didn't have to talk that much, but with other people, it's helpful.
Someone like me. So
I would talk you through it. You'd look
exactly.
So pretty.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of photographers out there that, you know, don't really know how to connect with people.
Definitely.
And I think that's a detriment indeed.
People that hide behind their camera.
Yeah.
They're like, I'm so artsy.
Yeah. All their shots are candid, which
right.
is, there's something to be said for candid shots too.
Yeah.
But when you also want to accomplish the stage shots and make them not look as staged.
Like an editorial type shoot where you're directing everybody, you know, what to do, but it does look more editorial.
Right.
So yeah, that's my style.
So how do you go through a customer engagement? Can you walk us through, you get a new customer, how do you handle that?
When I get an initial contact, I will provide them with, you know, what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have standard things that I tell everybody, like for an engagement shoot, I will send them a list of things to expect, what they should bring, what they should wear, the timing, how long it's going to take. It's very business.
Definitely.
You know, it's definitely, you know, I'll take pretty pictures, but you need to do X, Y, and Z in order to get those pictures. And so, you know.
So for like an engagement shoot, I see them all the time. Do they come up with those really sort of, I call them corny, my girlfriend would yell at me, but like the two hands
the
and the hearts.
Yeah.
Do they come up with all that
well,
and go take that shot,
I mean,
or do you have to come up with all that?
If you've ever been on Pinterest, you'll know that that's where most of the ideas for – you've never been on Pinterest?
No, my girlfriend is always on Pinterest, so I'm just – she's like, hey, look at this this wedding album here. Oh, look at these engagement rings.
I mean, that is a giant source of information for most people these days. Brides are all over Pinterest, so there's a lot of ideas for shoots, and people see something they like, and they think, well, I want to do that.
And then the next day, they're like, oh, but now I've seen this on Pinterest, and I want to do this.
So, but I love when brides send me pictures that they love, because then I can recreate what is important to them.
Mm-hmm,
and also, it just gives me an idea of their style. So.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's important to bring that into the whole thing,
is
their style. You don't want it to just be
about me. Yeah. Now, this is what I like. I don't care if you don't know. I will listen to what my clients like.
So are there any new trends in the photography world coming up, or is there new technology that's going to make things simpler? Or?
Well, I know that the glamour trend is big right now, so that is something that I'm really excited about. As far as technology, that's always changing. It's impossible to keep on top of it. So you find what works, and you kind of stay with that until you find something else that works and you kind of incorporate that. So digital is wonderful, you know, being in the digital age. So you just kind of really have to be connected and constantly educated.
Definitely.
Yeah. Stay on top of the research.
Right.
What's the biggest, best.
Yeah. And, you know, I love Creative Live is a website, and they provide free education. It's amazing. They have photographers come on and other people who come on and talk about business, and maybe it might be marketing. And it will be a free, like, 2 or 3 day workshop, and then you can buy it afterwards.
Okay,
and it's just
awesome.
An amazing resource. It really is. So.
Do you use what are the resources you use for inspiration? Because I know it's really important in your business.
Well, the internet, like everything. So Creative Live is where I get a lot of my education, and then Pinterest and, you know, other photographers' websites I will look at just to see what's new, what people are doing.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I tend to just look around me and see what people are into and go with that.
Awesome. Yeah. So do you still take just pictures for fun? I know sometimes when you're so busy, you start doing this, and you start up as you love it, and then you're finally like, oh, I have a break.
Well, it's like, yeah, if you have two shoots on a weekend, you know, it is physically exhausting to shoot a wedding or an event or something like that. So I do need a day or so just to not touch my camera, but I'll like have an event, and the next day one of my kids will have a sporting event. And why aren't you bringing the camera? Like, oh, God, I just don't want to carry it anymore. But, yes, I'm constantly taking pictures. If a day goes by where I'm not taking pictures, I'm not happy. I need to have that creative outlet.
So, as a technical question, what camera do you use?
I use a Canon 5D Mark II.
That's my camera. I have that camera.
Yeah, it's a beautiful camera.
It's amazing for film. So I used to be a filmmaker.
Indeed. Yeah, they use it a lot for video during weddings and events as well. Yeah,
it's awesome.
Yeah.
So, are there any photographers that you admire?
And yes, two photographers that I truly admire for their ability to give back are Jasmine Starr and Sue Bryce. Jasmine Starr is a wedding photographer. She's internationally known, and she is so humble, and she gives away information, which is really hard to find in this industry. People tend to keep close to the vest, and she's willing to share everything she knows to help other people, which is wonderful. And Sue Bryce does a lot of glamour and also is very humble and giving, but she's also a great businesswoman. Mm-hmm. Like, she has an incredible business mind. So I've learned a lot from her.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. Well, do you have any tips for any of our listeners out there that might want to be a photographer? Mm-hmm. Like yourself?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess the first thing would be just get your business in line first. Like, you have to know it's not just taking pictures. It is a business, and you need to be prepared for all of your expenses and get your spreadsheets and all of that in place beforehand.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of business, where's it going to be in the next 5 years? Where do you see it growing?
I hope to have a bigger and better everything, you know, keep on top of the technology and get a, you know, nice natural light studio and just work with, I love working with women, and surrounded by women every day, and just, they're very encouraging, and having met Jessica.
Encouraging, very powerful, and they really help each other. That's what men don't do. The men kick you when you're down.
We look out for each other. We refer each other and take care of one another, and it's very nurturing and a very good environment to work in.
Yeah, so, definitely. Yeah. I see that a lot in all the event planners and different people that do events in the event industry. They're a lot like that. Yeah. And they're mostly women. So
women are fantastic. Yeah. Yes.
I agree with that.
All right, Christine, can you give our contact information for our listeners out there that we want to reach out and contact you?
Well, my website is crimsonshutter.com, and my email address is christine@crimsonshutter.com.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Right, do you mind hanging out with us while we visit
absolutely.
With our next guest?
Thank you.
Well, next up on Meeting Pros, we have Amber C. Saunders with Enrichment Prep and Failure Box. Welcome, Amber.
Thank you for having me.
No problem. So which one of these companies do you want to talk about first?
Enrichment Prep, because I'll keep it brief.
All right, keep it brief. You can hear that. The kids have beaten her down.
Well, I shouldn't even say they're beating me down. I'm trying to figure out. So originally, I started Enrichment Prep in 2010 and tutored everywhere, had classes. But now it's like I'm tired, so there needs to be a way for it to be scalable. So I'm trying to figure out the best way for it to be online so that I don't have to use all my gas or, like, do all of that stuff and just make it easier.
Definitely. Yeah. Well, I think that's a definite problem just with the teaching industry in general. You hear that all the time. You have these fresh women and men coming out of school, and they're, like, very passionate. Like, I want to do this. And then after 4 years, they're beaten down and angry and curmudgeon. So if you could solve that problem, that would be great.
Well, it's interesting. I think that there's a lot of I went to New Orleans in April to 4.0 schools. They have an accelerator and like a launch program. And so they try and get people from different industries, not just teachers, but other things together to try and figure out a way to make education better for students. Mm-hmm. But most of the companies that seem to be created even around technology are really just extending what is already there as opposed to trying to do something different, because I guess the energy and the time that it would take to completely overhaul education is too much.
They'll
get something to extend what's already there, but if something's already wrong with that, then don't create something that adds on to that, then it doesn't necessarily work. So before putting anything into creating like videos or something like that. I'm trying to figure out if it really will be helpful, and if not, then I just won't do it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I'd be glad to give you one of my ideas. I actually have a friend. She's a teacher, and if you extend to the technology realm, I think it would work really well with kids, is that she is at a school where she has, like, I think 30 people in her class, and they're all working at their own speed, as in one person in 2 years is done with all their math for all of high school, and they're not that good at history, so maybe they're behind. But it's an awesome idea, and if you applied it to the technology world of that these kids can work at the fastest pace possible or the as slowest pace, and they can and you can scale the work to them, I think they'd learn more and they'd be a lot happier. No one would really get left behind, per se. Yeah,
right. No, I think that's an amazing idea. There was a school that actually – it's a charter school, so charter schools have a little more freedom.
Yeah.
But they applied like lean startup principles to what they were trying to do in school. So with what they were doing, they didn't necessarily make all the students have to learn the same thing, or they used technology like different videos so that the students could learn at their own pace. And they saw that all the students were able to get the help that they needed. So if they didn't get a concept, they weren't forced to go forward.
Yeah.
They were able to just keep looking at it until they grasp it.
And they could excel the things because that they're good at. But kids really aren't equal. I mean, you can't just – we've been telling kids that they're equal and they're all the same. And I heard recently, I think it was in New York, they're trying to have – they don't want to have Fs anymore. They don't want to fail anyone. They say everyone just gets Cs if they don't pass. We'll just give them Cs. I was just like, really? That sounds horrible to me.
Yeah,
it is. It's interesting. There was a there's an article by Seth Godin, and I'll never say his name right.
I love
but, him. But, yeah, it goes through, like, the history of education. And when they started to create schools, it was to create or to place people in, like, industrial economy. But our economy's not like that anymore. So to make students learn all the same information so that they can go work in a factory that, like, it doesn't work. So we're creating students that aren't necessarily ready to go into the world the way it is now.
Yeah, they're not at all. We need to teach them some business sense.
Very much so.
Half my friends.
She's working on that too.
She's doing that. Well, let's go to your next company. Let's talk about Failure Box.
Okay, so Failure Box is after I've like screwed up several times with enrichment prep.
This means you're a good entrepreneur.
Right.
Yeah, that's how we like to say it here in the studio.
Yeah, we're good. I mean, I don't have any negative connotation associated with failure, and I think that part of that is because I was a clumsy kid. So, like, after you fall a lot, like, you really can't get embarrassed by screwing up.
Well, I never learned unless I screwed up.
Right. So, it's like, well, so when I started the company and people would be like, well, how much sales do you have? What's this? Or I would change the business model. Like, I really wasn't embarrassed to discuss it. But in being around other entrepreneurs, there's, like, this huge fear of failing.
Yeah.
And it's almost like people won't go after their dreams or won't start a business because they don't want to screw up and have to answer or tell someone that they messed up and you'll never get anything done.
Yep. Yeah.
So essentially, Failure Box was a way to try and normalize the idea of failure or to make people to change what they think it is. So failing really is if you just don't do it. It's not that you didn't make money or it's not that you had to change the business model because you learn when you mess up. How are you going to get any lessons from your customers unless you give them something they don't like, they tell you they don't like it and you fix it.
Exactly. Right.
So what we do is we try and have mixers. There are a few programs that we're trying to do. So we have we had our first mixer at Atlanta Technology Village where students from all the area colleges came, and it was most helpful for them because they always get entrepreneurs who are already rock stars who say, oh, I made millions of dollars, and they don't tell you about the 15 companies they started before they got this one.
Right.
Or how they, you know, the realistic part of being an entrepreneur that you might not make any money for a while or you might have to work and have your company or all of those things. So it was very refreshing for the students to be able to hear in a non-academic environment from entrepreneurs who were having candid conversations with them about it.
We at Business Radio X love Atlanta Tech Village. Mm-hmm. We've had David Cummings in here and a bunch of the different startups, and I think all their stories are amazing, and they would really inspire kids.
Definitely. And so the next one we're supposed to have at 200 offices with Omer Dar from Social Box.
Yes, he's really good. He's a cool guy. We had him here in the studio.
Yep.
So
And he's going to be presenting. He's going to be on a panel discussion.
I have a feeling that he's failed a lot. So he's just.
He's been an entrepreneur since he was preteen. I mean, he must have. He must have some just incredible stories.
Mm-hmm. But I have to tell you, the most successful people I've had, I think the average is they failed at least 7 companies before they've had this billion-dollar thing. They just keep getting back up and get back on that horse and just saying, well, whatever. I learned something. That was an experience. That's great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, remind us of the date of that event again.
It is June 26th from
5:30
to 7:30 at 200 offices. And you can go to it's the Eventbrite page is stematlstematl200.eventbrite.com. And you can register there. And there will be food and adult beverages as well as parking included.
So maybe some advice for our youngsters out there that just get out of college. They have no idea how to market themselves or put themselves in a leadership role to get a job. They just have this degree, and they're like, yeah, they said this is worth $80,000. So here you go. Can I please have my job?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So what advice would you give them right now? It's a tough market.
I would say try something and screw up. Because when you're young, like, I think it's different when you're an adult and you have a family and you have kids. Mm-hmm. I get having some hesitation.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But when you're younger, you can screw up and then still fix it. And there aren't the same consequences for someone who has more responsibilities to go out there. It makes more sense for them to make calculated risks. You can, I wouldn't say be reckless, but figure out what you want to do. I think action brings clarity more so than sitting there trying to figure it out. So figure out, decide what you want to do, try it, see how it works, and then try something else if it doesn't, and don't be afraid. And then I'd also say surround yourself with people who are either trying to do the same thing or someone who can be your sounding board, because I think there's nothing more discouraging than having to listen to family. If you want to be an entrepreneur and then you have people who have jobs and they're thinking of you and they want you to be safe and healthy, but they don't think like you. So it's kind of hard for them to understand what you're going through, and it can be discouraging if you're not necessarily around people who have the same kind of mindset. So try and surround yourself with similar people, not those people who will be, people, but still just who can encourage you when you're going through the process and understand what it is.
I think the people part's really important. How important is the networking part? I know you have these like super smart kids behind their computers that are trying to build the next social media animal, but they're not talking to anybody and they're not getting out there. And it doesn't matter really if they have the best idea, right, if they don't know anybody.
Right. I mean, you have to talk to people. And I mean, it's probably the most uncomfortable thing in the world for a lot of people. But if you're building products for people and you don't talk to people, I don't know how that's going to work out for you.
Exactly. Yeah. I hate talking to people. So.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I mean, even from the movie, at least Mark Zuckerberg had some people in his room. Now, he made Facebook because he was pissed off at a girl. But still, like, he still was talking to someone, and then he did it in reaction to a person. So you still have to interact with people. And I think trying to get to know... I hate traditional networking, I guess, to some degree, where you just give out cards to everybody in the room without having any.
Too.
It's ridiculous. But if you just really try and get to know people and try and add value first without trying to ask for something all the time, then I think that you can create relationships and then learn something from them that way. So they need to try and talk to everybody.
Yeah, I found out it's really easy to network when you have a radio station. You're just like, hey, you want to be on my radio show?
And it's really easy when you're a student. Yeah. Like I tried to tell the students, and once you graduate and you don't have that EDU behind your email, things start getting tough. Yeah. Like you need to ask people while you're in college, because I feel bad every time I get an email from a student and they ask me for something and I can't do it. I'll figure out a way to do it because you're a kid. I'm not going to tell you no.
Yeah.
So like you better take advantage of that, because when you graduate and you don't have it.
It could be that 53-year-old going back, but you're like, oh, I'm going to help this kid out. Right. Like the EDU behind his name.
It makes me feel bad every single time.
Well, the thing I like most is I really feel like Atlanta is the best-kept secret for an entrepreneur. Like, everyone wants to go to California for their startups and hang out in the San Francisco area and get their VC money there. But Atlanta really is just – we have so much talent here. We have Georgia Tech. We have all this different stuff, and I think people really need to know that they can really start a business here and be very successful.
Mm-hmm. I think that they can be very successful, but I think that the one thing that – If we don't change it, it can be detrimental for us is trying to be like California or trying to be like Austin. It's figuring out, okay, what is special about Atlanta and how can we capitalize on that to make the world know that we have businesses here, and as opposed to trying to copy off of, because that mix that they had there is not necessarily what we have here. We have something completely different that can work for us, but we can't try and duplicate anybody else's city.
All right, not to put you on the spot, Amber, but what is that thing that Atlanta has that these other places don't? Besides great food.
Great food, I think, and it sounds crazy, but Atlanta has a cool factor that other places don't have. We have art.
We have swag.
We have music. Yeah. We have people. Now we're more technology. We have all of those things in one place. And if there's a way to make all of those things come together, or to create an ecosystem where, okay, if I need design, we have tons of people here who can design or do photography or do it, but people don't necessarily know because every little silo is separate from the other. If we figure out a way to put those things together so that all of those resources are used, then I think that we can do something different, because it doesn't necessarily, we're not going to be just technology ever.
I completely agree with you. And Atlanta is really cool because it's one of those cities that is a hybrid of like a bunch of other places. Like if you really like Chicago or you really like New York, there's places you can go that'll give you that feel of being there, where Atlanta doesn't have its own thing. It's like a melting pot. It's, I think that's why we have so many transplants here. We don't have normal Atlanteans like me, born and raised, and Jessica. So
yeah, I think that once Atlanta figures out its personality as a city, like there are some cities that have their own personality, and I don't know that we've figured it out yet, but I think once we do, then
watch
it'll
out,
change
world.
Everything. It'll change everything, definitely.
Yeah. I love that. Well, Amber, what is next for your two companies?
Well, enrichment prep, probably figuring out online. I'll figure it out before the end of the year. Then for Failure Box, we are doing a conference. I got a license from FailCon. They have a conference in San Francisco every year to discuss failure, dissect failure, why companies have failed, so that people can learn from the mistakes together. So we're going to be doing that here in November.
Awesome.
And then want to do a series where we break down so, like, for example, there was a company that competed with Mint called Wasabi, and the founder, after the company failed, talked about why they thought they failed, but like actually taking the failure of a company and looking at it like a case study so that people can see what happened where specifically, and then, you know, whatever lessons you take from it and apply to your company, but actually seeing why a company that got all this money or was going well didn't work out.
So Wasabi was a lot like Mint?
They tried to do something.
I didn't even know
like
that.
It.
I love Mint, and I just want to let everyone know, and I think we're talking about the same Mint. It's where you can put all your financial stuff in there, and it basically breaks down your spending habits, which is very awesome.
Yeah, so I think it'll be cool because everybody knows what most of the, I mean, I would think.
Yeah.
Most people know what Mint is. And so to see how their competitor, and it's not necessarily, why they failed is not necessarily because they launched after Mint, but like they really did an autopsy of what happened in the company.
That's so cool.
So I think trying to do something like that maybe once a month, just to give people an opportunity to see what actually goes into a company doing well or not doing well will help companies be able to apply it to their company and try and avoid those mistakes.
Yes. And all to all the people out there, all the people that want to be entrepreneurs that have a great idea, just to warn you, everyone has great ideas. Everyone has a thousand great ideas. If you take one good idea and try to make it into a business, and even if you fail, you're going to learn more than all those people out there with the most amazing ideas in the world. So go out there, start a business, and put yourself out there, definitely. So, Amber, how do people reach out to you and get to these mixers and learn more?
My email is Amber, A-M-B-E-R, I'm sure you know how to spell it, at the failurebox.com. You can email me and I can send you information. The website is www.thefailurebox.com. We also have interviews online with entrepreneurs in the city and outside of Atlanta where they discuss their failures, give tips. So they'll be posted on the website once a week. You can sign up for the newsletter, and then we'll probably have events once a month. So if you sign up for the newsletter whenever we have those events, you'll know about it.
Definitely. Are you partnered up with any schools right now to help them out? Because I think that'd be a great thing for students to go to these things. While they're
I mean, I've had pretty much support from all the schools that they let their students know. I'm probably, they said that during the summer they aren't in school, so when the fall starts back, we'll probably start doing some on campus to make it easier. Yeah.
Well, ladies, both of you, thank you for coming on. Great show. And Jessica, I always like to stop in and see how your Ventrapreneurs group is going.
Oh, it's going great. It's growing every day. We get more people involved all the time, and it's becoming a great little educational spot.
Awesome.
These ladies are both on there. So, yeah.
All right.
It's exciting.
Well, this is Kevin Finn for Jessica Park and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you next week on Meeting Pros.